Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case, keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And this is number 150, more than 150th episode, but this is episode number 150 of Not in a Creepy Way, a podcast by the Brothers Anderson.
How exciting.
I didn't even know.
It's the sesquicentennial, I think.
Very good.
Yeah. So tonight we're going to talk about the movie Miller's Crossing, 1990, a Coen Brothers film, their third, early on in the Coen Brothers' career.
Yeah, we are.
Shall we dive into the movie first and then talk about depressing losses we've had this week?
Yeah, I think that's best.
Yeah.
Okay. So Miller's Crossing. Drew, is this your pick?
I believe so.
So introduce us to this movie.
I thought about putting it on the calendar when... I think you and Jason at one point were talking about some Coen Brothers movie or maybe just the Coen Brothers movies on one of your podcasts. And I remembered watching this movie really early on, I think when I was in college. And I really dug it back then. And it made me a fan of the Coen Brothers for a while until I realized that I might not like their movies very much in general. So I'd always wanted to revisit this and see if it held up. So that's why I put it on the calendar.
Brother Jay, what did you think about this movie? Was it the first time you've seen it, or was this...
It's the first time I've seen it.
And what did you think?
I did not like it.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I think that had this movie had an entire soundtrack behind it of Yakety Sax, it would have been a great comedy. But watching it, it was just... I don't know. Maybe because I've seen lots of movies after this was made, watching this seemed kind of flat, and I found the story kind of thin, and I don't know. It didn't really captivate me. I think it was well acted, but and the universe was well crafted, and it was really beautiful. It was a gorgeous film to watch, but just the story just didn't, I don't know, didn't compel me. And it just seemed, like I said, it should have been a comedy. It was not very much drama, and it certainly wasn't really much suspense. So I kept imagining every time something happened, I just like inserted my favorite Benny Hill music, and it made me chuckle, which is probably not how they had intended the movie to come across.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, this is the story itself is a straight up ripoff of a Dashiell Hammett story. So it was an adaptation, but it's all about. I mean, okay, so I think I had recommended a book before that I can't get on Audible, although I wish I could. I think I have it on cassette. I may have to figure out how to record it digitally. It's Ethan Coen's. The Gates of Eden, and it's all these little short stories, which are basically just character pieces, and the readers of the story are fantastic. They're all the Coen Brother actors. It's John Goodman and William H. Macy and Steve Buscemi and, you know, John Turturro, and they're, like I said, they're just little character pieces, so I love the way the Coens write characters.
And I will say, like I said, visually, it was a great, beautiful film. I mean, the opening of the film with the rocks glass and the booze, that was just classy. I mean, I love that. So there are parts of this movie I liked, especially for the visuals. But also I hate Steve Buscemi, so that doesn't help.
Well, you should love this movie then, because he's barely in it, and then he gets shot in the face.
Right. No. That was a highlight.
Yeah, see, I really liked it. And I think I probably liked it more this time than before, because immediately it, to me, it opens with kind of a scene very similar to The Godfather, where you have somebody coming and asking, you know, the head of the crime family for a favor or permission.
Well, Leo, I ain't embarrassed to use the word. I'm talking about ethics. You know I'm a sporting man. I like to lay the occasional bet, but I ain't that sporting. When I fix a fight, say I pay a 3-to-1 favor to throw a goddamn fight, I figure I got the right to expect that fight to go off at 3-to-1. But every time I lay a bet with a son of a bitch, Bernie Birnbaum, before I know it, the odds is even up. Or worse, I'm betting on the short money. The Sheeny knows I like short things. He's selling the information I fixed the fight. Out of town money comes pouring in. The odds go straight to hell. I don't know who's selling to it. Maybe the Los Angeles combine. I don't know. The point is, Bernie ain't satisfied with the honest dollar he can make off the Vic. He ain't satisfied with the business I do on his book. He is selling tips on how I bet. And that means part of the payoff they should be riding on my hip is riding on someone else's. So, back we go to these questions. Friendship. Character. Ethics.
I'm gonna kill him.
Well, exactly. But in The Godfather, it was all pretty serious. And in this movie, we had a comic element to it.
Like I said, yakety sacks.
Yeah, so I appreciated the comic element in it and how there were some characters that were serious, but the situation was, you know, over the top. And I really like Gabriel Byrne. I thought he did a good job.
I really like Gabriel Byrne, too, and Marcia Gay Harden. I mean, yeah. And Albert Finney. I mean, this is a well-cast movie, again.
This is John Turturro's best movie. I mean, at least this is, I mean, he must have had a fantastic time because he chews up the scenery in such a fun way. He gets all the best lines.
This might be Gabriel Byrne's best movie.
Yeah, I was thinking about him as an actor, and he has done some good stuff, but he's also done some stinkers. Like, he should have won an Oscar for Stigmata.
he has stunk, or he's been in stinkers?
He's been in stinkers. I guess I'm trying to think of a movie where he's really stunk in. It's been a long time since I've seen Cool World.
No, he's amazing in Cool World.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like this movie. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I love this movie. I really enjoyed rewatching it. I mean, it's kind of right in my wheelhouse. It's a bit of a gangster movie. It's a bit of a caper movie. Like you said, the characters are every character is like really rich. There aren't any weak characters in this movie. It lives entirely in its own world without much explanation. You know, they kind of have their own language in a very David Mamet kind of way. And, like Jason said, it is beautiful. It's well shot and all the performances were great. And it's really tense. It's sometimes violent, but it is very funny all the way through. And I really like the main character, Tom, played by Gabriel Byrne. If Tom was a superhero, his superpower would be to cause exasperation in anybody he comes across. Because no matter what he does or who he's dealing with, whether friends or foe, they're always like, Jesus Christ, Tom. And that's throughout the entire movie. He's being the confidant of Leo, or whether it's the thugs who have been sent there by the bookie to beat him up. Everybody sort of has the same reaction to Tom.
So you don't think his performance in The Usual Suspects was better than this?
No. No.
I haven't seen The Usual Suspects in a while, but I want to watch it again because I watched this.
This movie, by the way, tanked terribly.
Oh, it did. Yes.
Yeah. It was budgeted at an astonishing $15 million, made $5 million.
Yeah, so I think this movie combined with Raising Arizona made me really forgiving of Coen Brothers movies to follow. But lately, I've just been not enjoying any of them. So I was happy to revisit this one and have a positive experience.
You know whose movie, favorite movie is Raising Arizona, right?
Who?
Our Father.
Oh, well, that's our Father's Day movie then.
I believe he loved that movie because I remember him talking about it a lot and laughing at it insanely.
Cool, because I've been struggling to find a movie for Father's Day.
Well, I'm again, my memory may be completely faulty, but I seem to remember him really liking that movie.
We've got a Father's Day movie.
What's our Father's Day movie?
Heat.
Oh, yeah.
Also, Dad really liked Neighbors, the Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi.
Oh, man, that movie freaked me out. It really did.
I don't even remember that movie. I mean, I know it exists.
Was it?
I want to say that was like cassette number 2 in our numbered version, our numbered catalog of movies.
I believe you're correct.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was terrifying for little Drew.
The only memory I have of the numbered cassettes in any detail was that I remember taping over the movie Altered States, and that was a mistake. I don't remember what I taped over it, or that I don't remember anything about it except it was like you taped over Altered States, and to this day I can't imagine why I'd want to watch Altered States again. But again, I was young, and so I was like, okay, duly noted. Don't tape over shit. I'm sure it was like WrestleMania 1 or something.
That seems worth it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, who knew? Yeah. So shall we get into the movie?
Yes.
Okay. It's like poor brother Jay. It's like, nope, nope, and nope.
Yeah, I have. We've already discussed all of my notes.
Okay. Okay. Well, first of all, I don't. Jason, have you seen the Godfather movies?
I have seen okay. I've seen parts of them, each of them, multiple times.
Okay.
I have never seen any of them in their entirety because I just lack the ability to sit through that. It's a big commitment.
It is a big commitment, but it's worth it in two cases. And arguably it's worth it for a different reason than a third case.
I was trying to get in the spirit because I'm not a big mob movie guy. Although mob stories are okay. I just actually finished an Audible book written by Henry Hill and Daniel Simone about the Lufthansa heist in the 70s. Hmm. So I was trying to get in the spirit.
But couldn't do it.
Well, it didn't help me get... I mean, it didn't help.
Because to me, this is in the same genre as the contemporary... Well, it's not really contemporary with The Godfather, well, but it's...
It's really Prohibition era.
Yeah, it's so. Like Godfather / Untouchables.
Right. I think I'm not a mob movie fan. I think that's why I have a hard time.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. One thing stuck out for me just for a little bit. Isn't Vito Corleone's right-hand man, Consigliere, isn't his name also Tom?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so it was like, huh. I mean, how on the nose is this going to be?
Robert Duvall.
Yes. Yeah, okay. But he was a white guy named Tom. Although, obviously... in this case, it's the Irish mob, and Tom is an Irishman, and Leo is an Irishman.
I think so is Tom Hagen.
Yeah, probably. Thank you for the that last name. I couldn't pull the last name. Yeah, so we open with this scene in a mob boss's office. The mob boss turns out to be Leo O'Bannon, played by Albert Finney, who is great. I love Albert Finney in pretty much everything he's ever been in, including Daddy Warbucks in one version of Annie, the Carol Burnett version, Tim Curry. Yeah. Then we have his right-hand man advisor, Tom Reagan, played by Gabriel Byrne. And he is having a discussion with Johnny Casper, played by John Polito, who's fantastic. And apparently he was thought of for originally they were going to cast him as his heavy Eddie the Dane, but he held out for the Casper role and got it, which is good. I couldn't see him being the heavy.
Yeah, that, well, yeah, he probably could have done it, but that actor is like the perfect, it's that guy.
Oh, totally that guy.
He's been in just about everything, in some small role or another. This is like his meatiest role that I can think of.
Yeah, well, and it's great because he carries it all the way through. And for a second in that opening scene, I thought, oh crap, is this Danny DeVito? But no, not quite.
There are at least half a dozen times throughout the movie that I thought he was going to have a premature ending with a comedically timed heart attack.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yes.
So Johnny Casper is angry. Because his little specialty is fixing fights.
Not very well.
Well, he fixes them just fine, but the problem is he expects a return on a fixed fight. And, you know, if he can't trust the fix on it, and he explains how basically one bookie, Bernie Birnbaum, played by John Turturro, who, again, kind of like the third man, comes in a little bit late and doesn't spend a lot of time on screen, but every bit of time on screen he has is fantastic.
He owns this movie with just a short amount of screen time.
He does. But his character looms so large in the script that, again, it's like the third man where they talk about him. So when you finally meet him, it's great. And the fact that he lives up to he lives up and down to his reputation is pretty fun. Anyway, but he's pissed because someone's tipping off these fixed fights, and so he's not getting the return on investment he expects because people know that they're fixed, and then all of a sudden he's no longer has a competitive advantage.
Because tons of money starts coming in on the fixed fighter, and so the odds go way down.
Yes.
So he doesn't get good odds.
Yeah. And he's laying out his case to Leo as a matter of business ethics. I mean, it's just in principle, you know, he expects this to work in a certain way. And when it doesn't work in a certain way, it's anarchy. And so,
yes,
Leo is not impressed by this. And he actually, the quote I think is great is he's like, you ain't got a license to kill bookies. And today I'm not selling any. So take your flunky and dangle. It's just one of the many cool phrases in this movie. I don't know if they ever were really the patois of the film noir characters, although Dashiell Hammett's characters have great lines anyway. Like, this movie is a very writerly movie, kind of like, again, like Mamet is a good comparison because all of the characters get like a little monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have plenty of time to deliver these great lines. Much like the, you know, the Sam Spade or Philip Marlowe in the Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler.
Bing. Chandler, bing.
So, okay, so anyway, yeah, so everybody's got fun lines in this. And so Tom, after Leo sends Casper and his goon, by the way, the goon is played by J.E. Freeman. And do you recognize him from Wild at Heart?
Yes.
Yes, he was Marcelo Santos in Wild at Heart. A movie that Jason and I recorded an episode about that will be forthcoming.
That's a great movie.
It is a great movie. And he is a great bad guy, too.
Yeah. No, he really excels at the bad guy role.
Yeah. And, you know, Casper is way over the top as far as being, he doesn't like, he keeps getting, he's giving him the high hat.
Yeah. He has a horrific death in this movie as in Wild at Heart.
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact. Spoiler. But, yeah, so Casper's pissed, and Leo is, you know, he's the boss, and tells him so. But as soon as Casper and his goon leaves, Tom turns to Leo and says, you know, so, you know, you sure about this? I mean, you know, you probably need to think about what protecting Bernie gets us and think about what offending Casper loses us. Because Leo's not a big thinker, and Tom is kind of fulfills that role. But, of course, nobody takes Tom's advice anyway in this movie anyway.
Yeah, and Tom's always right. Tom always knows what the score is. But, you know, what's not obvious to the viewer at this point is Leo doesn't want to let Casper kill the bookie because Leo has a lady friend who happens to be the bookie's sister.
Yes.
His twist. Leo's his
twist, yeah. And Tom lays out a very smart business case about why he should let Casper kill Bernie. It's a very pragmatic analysis of the situation, but Leo doesn't want to hear it because he doesn't want to get his girlfriend upset. Yeah.
He would lose his twist.
You like that term, don't you?
It causes a rumpus.
Yeah, we know. What's the rumpus? I love what's the rumpus.
You get the hi-hat with the rumpus.
Yeah, well, don't give me the hi-hat.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what it means either.
Like the hi-hat drum? Do you get like drummed off? Is it a drum reference?
I think it's a hat reference. Some cymbals.
You've got a smart mouth, kid.
Back to the plot. So, so Leo doesn't want to doesn't want Casper to kill Bernie because he is in love with Bernie's sister, Verna. And what we don't know until just a couple minutes later is that Tom is also having an affair with Verna. Tom doesn't have a lot of respect for Verna. Actually, Tom doesn't have a lot of respect for anybody in this movie, I don't think.
No. Although, one thing we also learn in that opening scene with Leo is that Tom has a gambling problem and is in debt to another bookie and is trying to gamble his way out of it and just keeps getting deeper in the hole. And even though Leo's willing to bail him out, he wants to take care of it on his own.
Yeah, several times during this movie, people attempt to bail him out, and he's like, no, I'm not going to bail out. He's gonna gamble his way out of it. I mean, Tom's not the hero in this movie. But yeah, so Tom tries to convince Leo to give Bernie up so that they don't end up having a war. And he tells Leo straight up that Verna is playing with, playing him. Like, she's just totally manipulating him to protect her brother. And Leo doesn't want to hear that.
Leo's in love.
Yeah. So after there's, I'm going to yada yada a little bit between Tom and Verna. Although it's pretty great. Again, the acting in this is pretty fun. It's a little over the top. It's kind of like the Hudsucker Proxy in that way, where everything is over dramatic, but for effect.
You know, for kids.
Yeah. Let's see. Sorry, I'm looking at my notes, and I think I am. I'm yadda-yadding a lot because there's a very, again, much like The Godfather, there's an assassination attempt on Leo, and it's very cinematic. And it shows you that Leo isn't just sort of the lovesick kind of non-thinking mob boss, but he's also an artist with the Thompson.
Leo is a badass.
He is a complete badass.
Also, it looked like the people who were trying to pull off the hit were stormtroopers.
A little bit. It reminded me a little bit of Out of Sight.
Yes.
But, so they burn down Leo's house, but they can't kill him because he is forced to be reckoned with.
They can't even get away. I mean, they try and drive away, and he murders them with their own Thompson gun.
Leo's a pretty big figure, and he's got one guy for this giant house that's protecting him. That seems a little...
Oh, he rectifies that pretty quick.
Yeah, but that seems pretty unrealistic.
Well, he didn't realize he was at war yet.
Yeah, he was downplaying Casper's effectiveness, like whether anybody would actually go at him. And what Tom tries to explain to Leo is that Leo's in control because everybody thinks Leo's in control. As soon as people start thinking Leo's not in control, then he's not in control.
Jason, you said this movie had a pretty thin plot, but I think it was pretty dense with story. I mean, you've got the Leo Tom stuff. You've got the Verna stuff with both Tom and Leo, and how that interconnects with Bernie and Casper. Then you have whatever the Dane might be up to. Like even at the end of the movie, I don't know if the Dane had something going with Bernie on the side, or if that was a complete fabrication by Tom.
I think, and I guess we're skipping around here, but I think we are led to believe that the Dane and Mink, who's the Steve Buscemi character, are an item, and Mink and Bernie are an item. So that's the connection that the Dane has with Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a love triangle, where if Bernie can take the Dane out, then all the better. And it turns out the person that ends up... What is it? The Bernie isn't necessarily the leak that's getting Casper's odds. It's really Bernie telling Mink and Dane protecting Mink.
Maybe.
Yeah. So anyway.
That's what I got out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have, yeah, it's all about relationships. It's Tom and Leo and Casper and Tom and Casper and Leo and yeah. And Verna and Leo, Verna and Tom. And then,
I mean, that even in your scenario, Bernie is the leak. He's telling Mink.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, no. Bernie is never presented as the good guy. From the very beginning, Bernie is icky with the capital ick. Yeah, and Verna gets no respect from anyone. Like the nice
not thing, even Bernie.
No, no, yeah, yeah. The nice thing about the Verna character is she doesn't take any crap, but no one respects her, which kind of gives her that hard edge too. She's the Courtney Love in this little drama.
Except that she couldn't kill her partner.
Maybe. The sequel is Leo committing, I'm using finger quotes here, committing suicide by shooting himself in the face with a shotgun.
You took my joke.
Nope, sorry. You go ahead.
No, that was why I was alluding to she couldn't kill her partner.
Poor Courtney Love gets no respect.
She's got all the assets. She can shut the hell up.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe Francis is finally getting some of it. I don't know.
Yes. To all the Love and Cobain family members, I'm not taking a stand on Kurt Cobain's death.
What, are you afraid she's going to come to your house?
Oh, I hope not.
There's not enough drugs in Anchorage, I don't think.
It's getting better. Or worse. So, yeah, well, really, the whole thing is just, like I said, about relationships. I mean, there's, I think, one... Well, there's the big set piece of Leo, the Leo assassination attempt, which is great. And then there is Tom giving up Bernie to Casper and being told to go and murder Bernie himself in the woods, which is, I think, the scene we were thinking of.
That's after Tom tries to break Verna's hold over Leo by telling Leo that he, Tom, has been sleeping with Verna.
Yes, that's true.
Which gets him the kiss off from Tom, from Leo.
Yeah.
As he beats the crap out of Tom and then kicks him out. Yeah. And it's, you know, it took me a while to figure out that Tom is the type of character who lives in a violent world but never does anything violent himself. He'll take a beating, but he won't give a beating. And he'll order people to be shot, but he won't shoot anybody. So he's an interesting character.
Yeah, well, so that's why there is conflict when he is given a gun and told to go take care of Bernie himself in the woods by Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, so after after Leo gives him the very bloody kiss off, Tom decides to go sell his services to Casper. And this is sort of Casper's initiation for Tom, is to get rid of Bernie.
And we have Tic Tac and what's the other guy's name?
Oh, the big dude?
Yeah.
Oh,
he's been in everything too. His last name is Star. I can't remember his first name, and he's not in my notes, I don't think. It's like Nikki and Tic Tac or something. And again,
sounds close enough.
They're like comic characters. I mean, they're really comic relief. Just like kind of Casper is sort of like comic relief. Oop.
Frankie
and Tic Tac. Yeah.
Yeah.
But seriously, they take him out there, and they're not going to watch him make his first kill for them.
Well, they are henchmen. They are not leaders of the pack.
Yeah, but still,
they're lazy. They're lazy and dumb. Mm.
And are just happy they don't have to do it.
Seems right. Awfully convenient plot point. That's what I'm saying about the plot. It just didn't seem these big monsters. I didn't buy it.
I didn't care because it gave us such a great scene by John Turturro.
Oh yeah, he is. Like I said, every time you get to hear Bernie talk, it's fantastic. Even though I mean this, you know, him pleading for his life is you know, distressing, but it's still great.
And Gabriel Byrne is so good in his silence.
Yes.
Like, it's like verbally it's a monologue, but visually it's a dialogue, just watching everything that's happening.
And, you know, so we have Tom, who takes Bernie out to the woods away from the henchmen, and decides not to kill him, makes it sound like he kills him, and then tells Bernie to disappear, which would have solved the whole problem.
Indeed.
Yeah, but no, Bernie's not a smart guy. Bernie's a greedy guy. So Bernie then ends up turning up. Hang on just a second. So now, did Bernie kill Mink and put him out in the woods? Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Bernie shows back up to blackmail Tom.
Yes.
Because his very presence is bad for Tom, and he's trying to exploit that.
And at this point, because Tom burned the bridge between Leo and Verna, you know, they're kind of they kind of discuss how they're sort of stuck with each other. But it doesn't sound like necessarily either of them are going to end up riding off in the sunset together. Although maybe Verna would like to, but again, Tom has no respect for Verna.
But he seemingly loves her.
Yeah. Casper, in the meantime, has sort of usurped Leo's authority in the town and is now making political connections with the chief of police and the mayor.
And all the while, Tom is like sowing seeds of discontent between Casper and his main guy, the Dane.
Exactly.
And the Dane does not like the fact that Tom now has Casper's ear at all, which sets up some very fun conflict.
Oh, yeah. Especially when the Dane finds out that neither Tic Tac or Frankie saw Tom kill Bernie. So he drags Tom out to the woods. And that's a very good scene where, you know, because we know that Tom didn't kill Bernie. And Tom knows that Tom didn't kill Bernie. And the Dane's pretty sure. So we're expecting to see, you know, especially Tom has had this recurring dream about his hat flying off in the woods.
There's nothing sillier than a man chasing after his own hat.
Exactly. So you kind of expect maybe this is a premonition dream where they're going to kill Tom dead and his hat's going to fly off into the woods.
It's funny. Normally when we have such wild digressions from the movie of the week, it's because we didn't really enjoy the movie. But this one, I quite did enjoy, but it's really hard to talk about and communicate like how great it is, because it's really the language and the scenery have to be experienced to appreciate. It's hard to describe it.
Yeah, because the plot itself is like a dance, so you have to appreciate the dance or not. The Jay is not a fan of this particular dance.
Yakety Sax.
Seriously,
I want somebody to remake this and put Yakety Sax throughout it, and I think I would love it.
I just wish for the podcast we had like a sound cue for eye rolls.
we could have that happen.
Get my custom sound effect for eye rolls.
Yeah.
By the way, the back-to-back crickets on the last episode is pretty fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I do have fun when I edit. So, yeah. So, the end of the movie, without going too much into the massive setup and the whole thing, is that at the very end of it, Tom ends up with Leo, and Leo realizes that pretty much everything Tom has done was to protect Leo, yeah, for the most part. And so Leo offers him his job back and tells him he forgives him, which Tom is like, I didn't ask for it. I didn't want it. And goodbye, Leo.
Yeah, I thought the second half of this movie was like just a fun setup of Tom putting all the dominoes in place and trying to, you know, set them in motion before he gets murdered.
Exactly, yeah. Because it all ends up, I mean, he ends up paying off his debt and pretty much comes out unscathed. Compared to everybody else who ends up quite scathed.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was a really, really fun movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So this was Blood Simple and then Raising Arizona and then this before we get to the other Coen masterpieces. When was the last time you saw Blood Simple?
I don't know that I've ever seen Blood Simple.
I've got Blood Simple. I'll just loan it to you. It's great. It's fantastic. And has this kind of sensibility to it. Like, there's some funny parts to it, but there's also sort of brutal parts to it.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. I've seen Blood Simple.
Have you seen Blood Simple, Brother Jay?
Nope.
Okay. You may have.
M. Emmett Walsh is super creepy.
Yes. Yes. And there's a scene at the end that's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think that was on... Blood Simple was on the same video cassette as Body Double, which I think is a movie that does not hold up. Although there's a very interesting scene where they play Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax at a like nightclub / sex club.
Where else would you play that song?
Everywhere. On the bus. Playground.
The bathroom at Target.
Any bathroom. Any public bathroom. In between sessions at the church. Whatever. During your Zumba class.
Zumba.
I'm not even sure what Zumba actually is.
Zumba is enthusiastic dancing for fitness.
I was always more of a Taibo guy.
Oh, of course. What, Billy Blank? Fucking A.
I ride with Billy Blank.
Yeah. So, okay, so. Miller's Crossing, starring Marcia Gay Harden. Who appeared in Space Cowboys, starring and directed by Clint Eastwood. Who is in Where Eagles Dare with Robert Beatty. Who is Dr. Ralph Halverson in 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Well done.
Yeah. Do you have a Take Shelter rebuttal?
No.
Okay, so anything else on this before we talk about death?
Nice segue.
Well, I mean, I realize that Prince, the loss of the music legend Prince, is probably more historically important at this time. However, the death, the unexpected death of Patton Oswalt's wife, who is a crime writer by the name of Michelle McNamara, really bummed me out. Partly because she's the same age as my wife and has a child about the same age as my daughter.
Have they released what happened to her yet?
Nope. Nor really, I mean, I can't imagine, I guess because it's Patton Oswalt's wife, there is a tiny bit of news value to it for like TMZ, but it's actually kind of no one's business. But it's very sad because I have heard her on podcasts. And so, you know, and of course, Patton Oswalt is on all kinds of social media and podcasts and TV and movies. And so of all the like death this year, I mean, Bowie, yeah, Prince, yeah, but I mean, this just seems like, it's the worst. Well, and yet I don't know her or anything. I mean, Brother Jay, you've experienced actual death by people you know. So
yeah,
that sucks. Even worse.
And I was going to say, you know, David Bowie bummed me out, but the Prince thing actually brought me to tears. So, and I love David Bowie, but, you know, Prince... there was so much performance value and so much showmanship, but also so much artistry and creativity. And he just affected so much and helped so many artists get their start and help artists make it big, and was a mentor and wrote prodigiously, and wrote some songs that are some of my favorite songs. So, it was really kind of devastating because of the shock of his just being gone.
Well,
and that loss.
And much more than Bowie, I imagine, it's more the soundtrack to your life.
Kind of. I mean, there were certainly more songs that were, you know, written by Prince, but performed by others. Although in some cases, some are better performed by Prince, even though he was either sold or given to other artists. So, you know, Nothing Compares to You is a great Sinead O'Connor song, but his version, if you can find a version of it, is pretty haunting. You know, Kiss was a great song. You know, it's redone by Tom Jones and Art of Noise, and what I think is a outstanding tribute as a cover, but is still done by Prince. It's pretty amazing. You know, he's like the Bee Gees and Barbra Streisand and Kris Kristofferson. He's written tons and tons and tons of stuff for other people. So, you know, the Bengals, and you know, the list goes on. So, just the fact that, you know, his death was so sudden, and he was, you know, relatively young still. I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, grateful for the talent that he left behind, but I'm sorry that his talent is lost.
Well said.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I mean, although I will, because that's what I do.
When I worked at the movie theater, I think we had two Prince movies that came through, and it was amazing to witness being Anchorage in the late 80s, early 90s. It was amazing to see the diversity of people that came through that would go through and sit in a Prince movie. People that you might not expect as the stereotypical patron for a Prince movie. There was a very wide swath of people that would come and watch. So that was entertaining for me. Plus I got to, watch myself. So that was cool. Being able to watch, repeatedly, and if you could time it right, and sometimes I would, time it right, you would get favorite songs and I would know when they would be playing in the theater. So I would go and, just check on the theater and hang out for a minute or two. Because, auditorium, a movie theater is a pretty great place to hear, music. So.
Oh, best sound in the world.
Exactly. So.
And one fun thing that is sort of a result of his passing away is, any media outlet who had any footage of like an interview with Prince is starting to rerun it, which is great because he didn't give tons of interviews unless he had very something specific he wanted to talk about. And that anytime there's an interview, it's a reminder of just how straight up funny he was. I mean, he had a really dry sense of humor. So he wasn't like jokey funny, but he was really clever and really witty, self-deprecating, but very, very, very quick on the uptake, and just really hilarious if you actually listen to what he was saying.
Well, this also, of course, Prince is the subject of my favorite Dave Chappelle Show moment when Charlie Murphy talks about going to Prince's house. Have you guys seen that?
I have not.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you got to search it out because it's hysterical. I'm not going to give anything away, but it's really funny. It's a true story, apparently. But it's hilarious. And you're right. It's interesting to see how everybody reacts to it. But also, he was also a badass when it came to, when he... became the artist formerly known as Prince. It was a big fuck you to Sony Records, who, you know, like he fought for his ability to record the music his way and not be hampered by unreasonable contracts and stuff.
Showed up on the Today Show with Slave painted on his face.
Okay, he wasn't subtle.
Nope.
He took on, you know, Sony Records. And, I mean, some would say it hampered his career, but he certainly, you know, he never backed down from it. And so when you look at artists like Kesha, who's having her own problems with, is it still Sony? Is that the, I think that's, yeah, for different reasons, of course, but yeah, so it's quite interesting.
Well, I think it's and maybe that's we're reaching a turning point in my life or our lifetimes where, you know, it's all downhill from here where the people that I'm familiar with are just going to start dropping like flies.
Oh, yeah. No, and the baby boomers are going to die in droves.
So, you know, there's that aspect of it where, you know, I guess the dose of reality is that, you know, eventually, it's, you know, that's what I just have to be comfortable with, but it doesn't make it any easier. It still was a shock to hear it. And, you know, so I don't know. It's been interesting. And I've stopped listening to the news really. Cause I could only handle so much, you know, after show, after show, after show, like everybody has their tribute and that's great, but I could only watch so much of it cause it just became painful.
Yeah. Well, there's funny stories though. I mean, Prince is a Jehovah's Witness, so you get funny stories of people that would answer their door, and it would be Prince doing his proselytizing. How about that? And be like, "Honey, Prince is at the door. Can he come in and talk to us about the Jehovah?" Like, yeah, invite him in. Grab a copy of the Watchtower. And you know, he'd ride his bike around. In his Minnesota town that he lived in, apparently haunt the Walgreens toward the end of his life. But again, weird. But yeah, no. And then people come out of the woodwork, and that's you know, again, be careful. Let's see, feet of clay. Somehow, I don't not have way.
Yeah, no, I think I know where you're going. We're probably about a week or two away from the inevitable backlash where people are going to stop writing about what a transcendent artist he was and start writing, you know, think pieces about, well, remember the time he did this shady thing. Don't forget he did something horrible at some point.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I mean, there was already, I can't remember which news outlet, but it was through the Drudge Report where his Prince's drug dealer speaks about how he was, you know, taking lots of fentanyl and other kinds of like heavy sedatives. So whether that's true or not, it doesn't actually matter because it still makes headlines in this time. So,
well, and it doesn't matter because he's still dead.
Well, yeah, and we won't know for weeks what the real cause of death was. So.
Well, and regardless, he's still dead.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yep.
And it doesn't diminish.
And would it blow anybody's mind that a famous musician might have dabbled in illegal drugs?
Yeah. Yeah. Or exactly. Yes.
And none of that negates his accomplishment.
No,
not at all.
No, of course
not.
It doesn't diminish it. It doesn't tarnish it. I mean, the music stands on its own. And, you know, that's the legacy we have. And so that's the gift we're left with. We just have the loss of not having any more.
Well, and we also won't get to read Michelle McNamara's book about the original Night Stalker, Golden State Rapist, serial killer she was working on, which sucks.
Maybe her husband will finish it.
Perhaps. Certainly he could. Yeah, and as I talked to Drew about on Sunday, you know, sucks that he has a job where he has to, still go out and do shows and be funny.
Be funny, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be I can only imagine that would be the hardest thing. Or maybe it's therapeutic. I don't know. I guess it depends on what kind of performer you are.
I'm sure it's therapeutic. Yeah, but do you really want to spend $30 on a ticket to go see Patton Oswalt possibly going through grief on stage?
I don't know. Tig Notaro did a very good job.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I think it depends on how you take your pain and harness it.
Yeah.
If he wants to.
Exactly. Yeah, and again, I mean, yeah, but I can't imagine.
No, just a nightmare.
Yeah, we're all gonna get old. We're all gonna die. Well, no, we're not all gonna get old. Some of us will get old, and we're all gonna die, though.
Yeah, we can't get too much older because we're just our mom's age.
Exactly. Yeah, just still the greatest line ever. So, anyway, any other thoughts? Or are we? Is that us for episode 150? Although certainly much more than our 150th episode. But thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, we couldn't do it without you.
No, couldn't have done it without you guys. So. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.